Have you ever lived in a complex, maybe an apartment building or like a group of townhouses, where one of your neighbors just casually volunteers to handle the finances and the maintenance?
Oh, yeah. You definitely know the type. You run into them in the driveway, they wave, and they're just like, "Hey, I'll collect the checks."
Right. They say, I'll pay the gardener, don't even worry about it.
Yeah, and it always sounds like a fantastic, super easy arrangement at first.
Exactly. Because you think, oh, great, I don't have to hire some pricing management firm. You just hand over your share of the cash and you assume it's all fine.
Right up until the day the money vanishes,
Yeah.
and the grass in the courtyard grows a meter high.
It is honestly the ultimate neighborhood nightmare. I mean, we love the idea of community trust, right? Of
Yeah.
keeping things casual.
Of course.
But when real money and real property are involved, that casualness sets the stage for a spectacular collapse.
It really does, which is exactly the focus of our deep dive today.
Yes, it is. Welcome, everyone. Today, we are unpacking a genuinely fascinating legal document from 2022. It's a decision from the State Administrative Tribunal of Western Australia.
Specifically, document Wasat 64 for those keeping track.
Right. And on its surface, I mean, that might sound like just a dry property dispute.
But it is so much more than that. In reality, this thing is a masterclass in local drama.
Oh, absolutely. Local drama and serious legal jeopardy. So we're looking at a dispute between two sides here. On one side, you have the applicant.
Which is the owners of an 8-unit brick and tile strata complex.
Yeah, located at 244 Flinders Street in Mount Joachim.
And then on the other side, you have the respondent, a Mr. Pereira.
Right, who is the co-owner of Lot 1 in this exact same complex.
And he was basically the guy who casually acted as the strata manager for years.
Yeah. And the reason we're looking into this today isn't just to gawk at a messy neighborhood dispute.
No, not at all. This case is like a perfect illustration of what happens when neighborly favors violently collide with strict legal frameworks.
It really highlights the profound dangers of unwritten agreements.
And it shows just how sudden and honestly devastating the impact of changing legislation can be on everyday life.
Okay, let's unpack this. Before we get into the missing $21,000,
Oh, yeah. There is missing money.
we are definitely getting to the missing money. But before that, we have to establish how this whole casual arrangement even began.
Because the informality of it all is the root of the entire disaster.
Exactly. So let's actually define what we're talking about when we say a strata complex, just so everyone is on the same page.
That is a crucial starting point. So, a strata title is a form of property ownership. It's designed for multi-level apartment blocks or, horizontal subdivisions where there are shared areas.
Right.
Essentially, you legally own your individual unit, like inside of your box,
Oh, yeah.
but you also share ownership and financial responsibility for the common property.
Which means things like the roof, the driveway.
Yep, external walls, the gardens, the plumbing infrastructure, all of that.
So you have eight different families here who all co-own a driveway and a roof, which naturally requires some sort of pooled bank account to maintain.
Exactly. And that shared responsibility requires administration.
Someone has to actually pay the bills.
Right. So let's go back in time to around 2013 or 2014.
Okay.
Mr. Pereira steps up. He takes on the strata management duties, and he does this under his registered business name, which was Budget Strata and Property Maintenance.
Okay, so he's using a business name.
He is. And he collects these very modest management fees for doing this. We're looking at old budgets showing he was paid roughly $1,200 to $1,300 a year for his
Plus,
services.
maybe some minor extra service fees, right?
Yeah, just small things.
Which, if you know literally anything about property management for an 8-unit
Of
complex,
course.
it is practically a token amount. It's incredibly cheap.
It is. But here is the critical flaw that sets this entire snowball rolling down the hill.
Yeah.
There is no written contract. The entire arrangement was just born out of a casual oral agreement made during an annual general meeting, an AGM.
Unbelievable.
Someone likely just proposed it, everyone nodded, and that was that.
See, it's like the dreaded group project in school.
Oh, entirely.
You're assigned a project, nobody wants to do the actual administrative work, and then one person finally says, "Look, I'll hold the cash. I'll buy the poster board. I'll do the formatting."
And everyone else is just thrilled.
Right. The rest of the group is so relieved to avoid the headache that they just look the other way. They happily hand over their $5 and assume the project will magically get an A.
That's exactly it.
But I have to ask you, Why are we so willing to hand over thousands of dollars in real life to a neighbor just to avoid dealing with some paperwork?
It really comes down to the psychological friction of bureaucracy. Human beings just naturally default to the path of least resistance.
Yeah, that makes sense.
When things are running smoothly, we substitute formal accountability with interpersonal trust.
Because demanding a contract feels, I don't know, hostile.
It feels adversarial. It feels like you are accusing your neighbor of being untrustworthy just by asking them for a basic receipt.
Oh, totally.
And the other owners in this specific case, they fully admit to this dynamic.
Really?
Yeah. Take Miss Civitella, for example. She's the owner of Lot 5. In her evidence to the tribunal, she openly accepted that she largely left all financial matters entirely to Mr. Pereira.
Wow. She just trusted him completely.
Completely. She never questioned the expenses, she didn't demand detailed invoices, and she just accepted whatever financial documents were handed out at those yearly AGMs.
I mean, it worked. Until it really, really didn't.
Exactly.
Because that group project mentality is perfectly fine when the lawns are manicured and the gutters are clean.
Right.
The liability shift only becomes obvious when the maintenance physically stops.
And that illusion of the casual agreement, it shattered completely in the years 2020 and 2021.
Things got bad.
The complex started physically falling apart. Ms. Civitella gave evidence that the grass on the common property had grown to an entire meter in height.
A meter? That is literally up to your waist.
It is. She testified it was actively triggering her allergies just living there.
I can't even imagine.
The grass was just totally dried out, and unwatered, unapproved painting was suddenly happening near the front entrance.
Which is always a bad sign.
And crucially, no annual general meetings were held at all in 2020.
So the communication just completely broke down.
Completely.
And when the owners finally started asking questions about this, the whole neighborly facade just dropped.
Oh, yeah.
Because Ms. Civitella started emailing, basically asking for an extraordinary general meeting to discuss this massive overgrown lawn and, you know, the unpaid gardener invoices.
And how did he react?
Well, Mr. Pereira's responses shifted from professional to extremely hostile.
That's a huge red flag.
Oh, huge. He refused requests. He became abusive in his emails. And when a new management company was finally brought in to try and figure out what was actually going on.
Wait, they brought in someone new?
Yeah. And he even threatened defamation action against them.
Wow. That defensive posture is just the classic hallmark of a system in total collapse.
Seriously. But the real climax of this story, the moment it all blows up, happens when the bank statements are finally forced out into the open.
Right.
We hit July 2021. The Stratus Trust Account bank statements are finally revealed.
And what did they show?
They show that between July 1st and July 30th, there were 9 separate ATM withdrawals.
9 trips to a cash machine.
Yes. 9 trips, totaling $17,750.
Good Lord.
This completely drained the account. It took a starting balance of just over $17,000 and actually threw the whole Strata Trust into a debit.
The money was just gone.
Gone.
And to compound the disaster, those bank statements also revealed that the building insurance had not been paid for 2021.
Are you kidding me?
Nope. They had a premium of over $3,200 due, and there was absolutely no record of it being paid. The complex was entirely exposed.
See, my immediate thought reading this was that he just marched down to the ATM and robbed his neighbors blind.
Right. That's the natural assumption.
But I was completely wrong about the actual mechanism of the theft.
What's fascinating here is how the tribunal views this loss of funds. The tribunal did not actually accuse Mr. Pereira of personal fraud.
Which is wild to me.
It is. But Mr. Pereira's explanation, which, by the way, actually went unchallenged by the Strata Company during cross-examination, was that a person he had entrusted to manage his business affairs was the one who took it.
So essentially a third-party agent or an employee.
Yes. Someone he brought in to help him was the one who absconded with the funds.
He essentially handed the administrative keys over to a third party, and that person ran off with all the cash.
Exactly. So while he didn't personally pocket the money by utilizing this third party agent and failing to implement like adequate controls to safeguard the trust account, Mr. Pereira exposed the entire 8-unit complex to massive financial and liability risks.
Oh, for sure. I mean, if that building had caught fire while the insurance was unpaid,
those 8 families could have been financially ruined.
Completely wiped out.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the legal showdown. Mr. Pereira is facing over $20,000 in missing funds. He's facing a furious council of owners who have obviously fired him and a tribunal hearing.
He definitely needs a defense.
And he comes up with a very specific, honestly, very clever legal shield. He argues that he shouldn't be held civilly liable because he was just a volunteer.
Which brings in the whole changing landscape of the law at the time.
Let's get into it.
To give you some macro-level context here, Western Australia realized that billions of dollars of real estate were being managed on these casual handshake deals.
Yeah, that seems like a bad idea.
Extremely bad. They were highly vulnerable to incompetence or theft. So the government decided to basically force the professionalization of the industry.
Okay.
On May 1st, 2020, major sweeping amendments to the Strata Titles Act 1985 officially came into effect. It completely overrides the rules for strata managers.
And Mr. Pereira clearly knew these new laws were coming.
Oh, he knew.
Because right around that time, he suddenly dropped his management fee to zero. He entirely stopped charging the $1,200 a year.
Very convenient timing.
Right. And in front of the tribunal, he pointed to Section 155 of this newly amended act.
So Section 155 is a safe harbor provision.
Okay, what does that mean?
It states that no civil liability attaches to a volunteer strata manager for anything that the person has done or omitted to do in good faith while performing their functions.
So if you mess up, but you meant well, you can't be sued.
Exactly. It is designed to protect well-meaning owners who step up to help their community for free.
Well, here's where it gets really interesting, and I have to push back a little bit on the tribunal here.
Okay, let's hear it.
If the guy is literally doing the job for free, waiving his fee entirely, isn't it incredibly harsh to strip away his legal protection just because he used an assistant? I mean, he is a volunteer. He just delegated a task to make the volunteer work manageable, and then he got betrayed by his assistant. Why doesn't Section 155 protect him there?
It's a fair question, but it all comes down to the precise statutory definition of a volunteer strata manager.
Okay, lay it on me.
Under the new act, waiving your fee is only one part of the test. You must be an owner of a lot. You must receive no fee or reward above a tiny prescribed honorary amount.
Right.
And D, you must personally perform the work of the strata manager.
So the word personally is the linchpin here.
Precisely. Because Mr. Pereira operated his strata management services through his business name Budget Strata.
Yeah.
And because he engaged other people, like the agent who ultimately stole the money to carry out those services, he legally disqualified himself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This is a crucial insight for anyone stepping up in their community. Or, you know, the law is designed to protect true individual volunteers.
Right.
But the moment you introduce a business structure or you delegate to an assistant to make your volunteer work easier, you strip away your own legal armor.
You essentially transition from a protected neighbor to an unprotected enterprise.
Exactly. Therefore, the tribunal ruled he was not a volunteer, and he absolutely could not use Section 155 to avoid civil liability.
Wow. So his volunteer shield just completely shatters.
It does.
You would assume, then, that the tribunal is going to just throw the book at him for breaching his statutory duties in July 2021.
You'd think so, since that's when the 17 grand was stolen and the insurance lapsed.
But they don't. They hit this truly bizarre legal loophole instead.
Oh, this part is wild. If we connect this to the bigger picture of how legislation actually works, we find a profound paradox.
Okay.
When the new Strata Titles Act rolled out on May 1st, 2020, the government knew they couldn't just void everyone's existing contracts overnight.
Because that would cause chaos.
Utter chaos. So they included a transitional provision.
A six-month grace period.
Right. Schedule 5, Clause 13 of the Act created this six-month window. Think of this grace period like a structural shock absorber.
Okay, I like that analogy.
It's designed to stop the entire system from shaking apart while everyone transitions to the new rules.
Right.
It basically said if you have an existing strata management arrangement, you can continue to operate under it for 6 months.
Okay, but then what?
But after that, by November 1st, 2020, you must bolt yourself to the new framework. Your contract must meet the strict new requirements.
And the most fundamental new requirement was what?
That the contract must be in writing.
Which Mr. Pereira never did.
No, he didn't.
There had that oral agreement from an AGM way back in 2013, and he just kept coasting on it.
Exactly. And because he never formally reduced the agreement to writing, once that shock absorber expired in November 2020, his strata management contract legally ceased to exist.
I mean, if you are listening to this and trying to keep the timeline straight in your head right now, you aren't alone.
It's tricky.
Imagine being one of the owners trying to untangle this mess while the grass outside is literally growing up to your waist.
A total nightmare.
Let me just see if I have this totally straight. The agreement evaporated into thin air in November 2020.
Yes.
But the money was stolen in July 2021.
Correct.
If the contract didn't legally exist in 2021, how can he be punished as a strata manager for what happened in 2021?
That is the loophole. Because the contract evaporated in November 2020, Mr. Pereiro was technically no longer the statutory strata manager when those catastrophic events occurred later in 2021.
Wow.
So the tribunal ruled they legally could not find him guilty of breaching the statutory duties of a strata manager for the events of 2021.
Because he wasn't legally holding the title when the damage was actually done?
Right.
That is wild. The very fact that he failed to legalize his own contract is the exact thing that saved him from being charged with breaching it when the money was stolen.
It's incredible irony.
But wait, he doesn't get off scot-free, does he?
No, he doesn't. The tribunal still holds him accountable for the bankrupt account and the overgrown courtyard.
How do they do that if he wasn't technically the manager?
The tribunal looks back at that six-month grace period, the window between May and November 2020, when he was still legally recognized as the manager.
Oh, I see.
They find the fatal breach right there.
They nail him on Section 146(1)(c).
Exactly. The duty to have a good working knowledge of the act. The tribunal looked at his own emails and saw that he was clearly aware the laws were changing.
Because he dropped his fee to zero.
Right. He knew there was a major legislative overhaul, yet he did absolutely nothing to formalize the contract, put it in writing, or alternatively, just hand over the funds and property to allow a new manager to take over.
He just sat on his hands while the clock ran out.
Yes. Which constitutes a failure to demonstrate a good working knowledge of the act. You cannot hold yourself out as a professional, know the laws governing your job are fundamentally changing, and then do absolutely nothing to comply.
Okay, so they catch him on his failure to adapt to the law, which is what opens the door for the financial penalty.
Exactly.
But, you know, the tribunal does actually take a moment to look at his personal situation, which I found interesting.
Yeah, they do.
Because his behavior, the hostile emails, the dropping of the ball, it didn't just happen in a vacuum.
No, it didn't. This introduces a deeply human element to the whole case. The tribunal noted Mr. Pereira's uncontested evidence about his personal struggles during this time.
And it was bad.
It was a remarkably dark period for him. Both of his parents in Sri Lanka passed away from COVID-19.
Man.
And due to travel restrictions, he was completely unable to attend their funerals.
That is just heartbreaking.
It is. On top of that, he was dealing with a personal relationship breakdown. He had a workers' compensation claim going on. He had demerit points on his driver's license.
Just one thing after another.
And, of course, the profound betrayal of the person he entrusted with his business affairs, who ended up stealing the community's money.
I mean, it's a horrific cascade of life events.
Truly.
Anyone going through all of that might, you know, let the lawn grow to a meter high, or maybe snap at a neighbor asking for an invoice.
It's completely understandable on a human level.
Yeah.
And the member presiding over the tribunal, Ms. K. White Lowe, she was highly sympathetic to these facts.
Right.
She explicitly accepted that he had been experiencing very difficult mental and personal issues. However, and this is the crux of administrative law, personal tragedy does not extinguish your fiduciary duty.
We should define that term quickly, actually, because it is central to why he was punished.
Good call. A fiduciary duty is the highest legal obligation one party can have to another.
Okay.
It means you are legally bound to act purely in the best financial interest of the other party, in this case, the other owners.
Right.
You have to place their financial well-being above your own personal chaos. If you cannot do that, your duty is to step down and hand the money to someone who can.
Wow. So what does this all mean? When the gavel finally falls, how does the financial reality actually catch up to him?
Well, the tribunal ordered him to pay the strata company $21,599.77.
Ouch.
This was under Section 200 of the Act to compensate for the pecuniary loss.
And pecuniary loss just means actual measurable financial damage, right?
Exactly. In this case, it was the missing trust account money plus a few other disputed charges that resulted from his negligence.
Plus they ordered him to pay costs, right?
Yeah, an additional $1,485 in costs.
But then the tribunal made one final highly specific order that just blew my mind.
Oh, this was quite a move.
They officially ordered that he must refrain from ever applying to be the strata manager of this specific scheme again.
A permanent lifetime ban for this one building.
Which seems almost unnecessary considering all the bad blood. I mean, you would assume he would never want the job again, and those neighbors would certainly never hire him.
You'd think so. The bridge wasn't just burned, it was nuked.
Totally nuked.
But the tribunal justified it by explaining the fundamental purpose of administrative law.
Okay, what is that?
It is protective of the public, not just punitive to the individual. You have to remember, ownership in strata schemes changes over time.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. 5 years from now, new owners might buy into the building and have absolutely no institutional memory of the whole budget strata disaster.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they wouldn't even know.
Right. So the order acts as a permanent legal block to protect the future of the complex from his demonstrated lack of judgment regarding financial safeguards.
It's literally a permanent do not resuscitate order on his management career in that specific building.
That's a great way to put it.
Well, I think that brings us back to the core lesson of this entire deep dive today.
Which is?
Informality is the absolute enemy of accountability.
100%. A friendly handshake agreement is a wonderful thing when the sun is shining, the fees are cheap, and the lawns are nicely mowed.
Yeah, it feels great.
But when the pressure mounts, whether it is a personal tragedy, a global pandemic, changing legislation, or a third party committing theft, that handshake agreement offers zero structural integrity.
It completely collapses.
It does.
It leaves the owners with empty bank accounts and a literal jungle for a courtyard.
Yeah.
And it leaves the volunteer manager facing a $20,000 legal bill.
The Strata Titles Act amendments were designed to force these casual arrangements out into the light, you know?
Yeah.
To make them professional, written, and accountable. Mr. Pereira's failure to recognize that shift and his attempt to kind of blend volunteerism with a business structure is what ultimately cost him.
It really is. So I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over today.
I like it.
We just spent all this time talking about how an informal neighborhood favor morphed into this massive legal liability, all because a business structure and third-party helpers were introduced.
Right.
Now, I want you to look at our modern world. Think about the rise of the gig economy and apps like TaskRabbit.
Oh, yeah.
We are constantly blending neighborly favors with these unregulated shadow businesses.
Yeah.
You might hire a local guy off an app to clean your gutters or, you know, manage your Airbnb keys.
It feels casual.
Exactly. It feels just like a handshake. But as we learned today, the legal line between a helpful neighbor and a fully liable business operator is incredibly thin.
Very thin.
Our modern neighborhoods quietly walking into a massive legal trap, relying on a digital handshake that will completely evaporate the second something goes wrong. Something to think about.